the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. A very special America Day, not Canada Day, but America Day. We just had Canada Day over here on Friday.
And it's 4th of July. It's not America
Day. July 4th, America Day. Everyone knows the name of this holiday is America Day. My name is Joey, like I mentioned, here with my co-host Len. Brother, how you doing? Great to see you.
Oh, I'm doing great, Joey. It's a great day. It was warm. It was sunny. You could enjoy the day. It was just fantastic. Hope you're doing the same over there in sunny and hopefully still sunny Hamilton.
It was raining today, actually, for a bit. So midday, it started to come down. I was out with my pup this morning trying to beat the heat, which we did. Though he will need another walk probably tonight, if I had to guess. He's just full energy, that guy, you know? Anyway, things are good here. Things are good there. Let's talk about the sponsors, shall we? ShakePay, best place for Canadians to buy and sell, though you should never sell your Bitcoin in Canada. A couple things going on there, Len. Most recently, they added the Shake Squads, where you and four of your closest friends or four people you've only met on the internet can spend your money off your CAD balance and get 42 Satoshis for every single spend. No problem. Very good. Also, they got the Shaking Sats. If you sign up with their promo code CBP, that's Charlie Beta Peter. Can't fuck that up. You can get, I think it's up to 1,000 sats after a year now, right? So you shake for a year straight, yep. 365 days. On that 365th day, you get 1,000 sats. They also have the Sats Back card. So you spend off your CAD balance, you get 1% back after your first 5,000. And on your first 5,000 spent, you get 2% back all in Satoshis. And finally, Len, as far as I know, the Shake Paid is still going. Is it still going?
I believe so. I haven't heard anything that says they stopped
it. I haven't heard anything either. So they pushed it again. They were supposed to, I thought, get rid of it at the beginning of this month. But here we are on the 4th, America Day, as I mentioned, talking about Shake Paid. So you can have your whole thing comped if you spend off your CAD balance. They just give it back to you in Satoshis. You can't beat it. They're a great sponsor. We got to get a contest going with the Shaking Squads thing. Maybe like the most daily earn. Like we'll give people a week notice and say, like, you know, if your squad earns the most, ShakePay will give you each 20,000 sats or something like that. That'd be all right, eh? That would be a decent contest. We'll have to talk to Carlo about that. In fact, maybe we should have talked to Carlo before we said the idea on air because now at the time, it may be hard to call that back, right? But it's okay. No big deal. I'm sure you won't have a problem with it. Sorry, Carlo.
He's traveling abroad too. I don't want to say where he went, but I believe he's no longer in Canada for the next couple of weeks. Whatever. It is what it is. But our next sponsor, let's talk about them. Ledin. It's too bad Mario Gibney isn't here to talk about them. He did a wonderful job last week. Rhyming off what's the goodies that's involved with Ledin. So with Ledin, you know, you can buy your Satoshis, you can buy your Bitcoin from ShakePay. What are you going to do with it? Dump it on Ledin. You can earn some interest by doing so. And open up an account by using our referral code below. Dump 150,000 Satoshis or 75 USDC and keep it on our platform for 15 consecutive days and you'll get 10 USDC awarded to you. Also, if you have a large Bitcoin stash, you don't want to sell it, you just simply want to borrow against it, well, there. Ledin is there to help you out, and you can use that money to do whatever you want, fill up your car, buy some groceries, whatever it is. Just everything is very expensive, so you might as well take advantage of all the options available to you. As well, they also have the B2X, so if you think the price of Bitcoin is going up, which it is, if you look at the block clock, because I know it's showing, that's Moscow time right now, but price is going up, so you can double up your Bitcoin stack by using a B2X option, and once you get to a nice high price point, and you can just pull out, you're good to go, always pull out. And they also have the Bitcoin-backed mortgages, industry first. But check their website, see where it's being offered. It's not available in every jurisdiction. But also check their website for their lending and savings rate because they change on a month-to-month basis. That's it for the sponsors, Joey. Where's your
like glass of milk? You don't need the milk after that. I know the water's good sometimes, but really to like get that dry feeling out of your throat. Don't you find you just need the 3.25%, you know, the thick stuff or no?
I'm a water guy through and through. So So unfortunately not. I'm not pulling the milk weight here. I'm doing the water thing, which isn't very good, I guess. People are looking down upon me. I don't care. I do not care. But I just want to say, not happy America Day, happy 4th of July to our American folk out there. So Hope you're enjoying it. You're enjoying the barbecue. You're enjoying the beach. You're enjoying whatever. It's a great day to celebrate Independence Day, 4th of July. So also, there's going to be a Bitcoin meetup taking place on July 16th. Plate Licking Pleb, I think is the Licker Pleb, sorry, is the name of the Twitter dude that's organizing this. And it's going to be at Safari Bar and Grill. The address, 1749 Avenue Road North, and that's in York. There's going to be Greg Foss, Tomer Strohlite is going to be there. We are going to be there doing our first ever live show. And this whole event is sponsored by ShakePay, who also sponsors our show. There's going to be free booze, free food. Also, CoinKite is going to be showing up, and they're going to be raffling off a CoinKite cold card Mark IV, which I have in my hand. Not this one. Great is going device. To be raffled off.
Great device.
Yeah, it is. Fantastic device. So they're going to be raffling off that. I'm not sure if you want to add anything to that note, Joey, about the event taking place July 16th.
The address. I know Plate Liquor was asking us to give the address. Did you give it? Did I miss
1749 that? Avenue Road North.
Absolutely important that everyone show up. I know it's going to be a beautiful day. The fiat will be feeling the pressure that day after that meetup. I know the last meetups, you know, we both went to two, right? We did one that we can't still talk about somehow. And then another one we went to at Innocente. Awesome time, man. I hope if you haven't been to one, you'll come out. I was just saying to Len, I have another engagement that evening. So I'll be out of there right at 5. But from 2 to 5, we're going to do something live there. I don't know what yet. It's going to be some kind of podcast recording, something though. We'll come up with the format. Hey, Len, maybe bring on a third mic, a hot mic, something like that, and see if we can't have a little fun up there for a bit.
Yeah, and Plate Liquor is actually here in the chat talking it up. So if any questions, you could just direct it in the chat. Plate Liquor will be happy to answer it. Something else I do want to answer or just talk about is podcasting 2.0. I talk about it on a weekly basis. Definitely consider changing your podcast app and get one of the podcasting 2.0 apps like Breeze or Fountain. And Fountain, they had a monumental change in their platform not too long ago. Now you could simply listen to a show and get stream sets to yourself. Wonderful idea. So a few days ago, I collected almost 3,000 sats in one day for simply listening to shows. That's a lot of Satoshis for just listening to podcasts. I recommend you listen to them too, podcasts, including our own, on the podcasting 2.0 apps like Breeze or Fountain. And these are apps built for Bitcoiners by Bitcoiners. It's a win-win. Why not do it?
Can't beat it. Yeah, you can't beat it. I think that's it, Len. Any more housekeeping you want to do? Do we get any reviews? Anyone we got to rip from the comment section? No?
No, unfortunately not. They had an opportunity to do it, but nobody wrote any reviews. And we can just try just mosey on it to the show and talk about the price of Bitcoin before we really dive in.
Sure, brother. According to my block clock, it's $20,120 US. Not bad. Show pump, man.
Yeah. So in Canadian, it was $25,835. Long way to go before we're celebrating, but we're at least moving on up. Let's see how high we could get this. Six figures, seven figures, who knows? Anyways, Joey, let's just dive right into it. A couple of good stories I want to talk about right off the bat. And first one is, well, some more centralized exchange and related drama. And the contagion effect is strong in this sphere. And well, leading things off, we'll talk about the domino that is Three Arrows Capital. And this is the hedge fund manager. And it looks like it may be tits up. And a few days ago, it defaulted on a $670 million loan to Voyager Digital. And
that loan, is that all USD or that's also Bitcoin, right? It was a split between the two, as far as I know.
It's a split. So it's $350 million in USDC and another 15,250 Bitcoin, worth about $320 million in total. So yeah, it's split almost 50-50, but still they defaulted on that loan. And what did Voyager do? Voyager Digital? Well, they responded by ceasing all withdrawals on their platform, and their stock unfortunately plummeted and it's been wrecked in the past few weeks. And today it took another pounding as well. As of earlier in the day, when I looked at it, it was worth about a quarter of the price it was a month ago, and it's since even gone further down. And questions remain unanswered at this time as to Voyager's solvency. Will it go belly up or be bought out by SBF? I don't know. SBF seems to be in a buying mode these days. He has a lot of capital that is at his disposal, and he could snap up a lot of these distressed companies for pennies on a dollar. And we could talk a little bit more about him shortly. But as for Voyager, they announced, you know, I just mentioned that they ceased all withdrawals. And how will this impact people? Well, they currently, Voyager has $1.3 billion of crypto assets on their platform. So queue up another potential rug pulling, because it's going to be a good time moving forward. As for Three Arrows, they have been very active in the investment and digital asset world. They have hitched their wagon to the NFTs, to DeFi, and variety of companies like Voyager, BlockFi, and Celsius. And things look like it may be crumbling down right now. And on top of the loan default, they have also been ordered to liquidate, according to a court document from the British Virgin Islands. And furthermore, there's a report floating around that Three Arrows Capital has filed for Chapter 15 bankruptcy in the state of New York. So there's lots of smoke here. Follow the trail, and you'll see there's a tire fire known as Three Arrows Capital that's burning, which has lost its peg to being a solvent company. What's going to happen moving forward? Well, expect more companies to get wrecked. We hear news that Crypto.com, they have limited their withdrawals to 3K per day, which is incredible. Ask yourself, why would a company do this move? A company in good health wouldn't care about withdrawing its assets. A company in the game of rehypothecation of Bitcoin, it's a tough word for me to say, they would most definitely didn't want people to limit or to withdraw assets from their exchange. But who's going to be the losers from all this? There's going to be a lot of them. And the ones that left their assets on the exchange, people playing in shitcoins, people playing with DeFi. We've been saying it all along. Don't leave anything on the exchange. Don't play with shitcoins. Don't play with DeFi markets. The 20% APY seems very appealing, but it really isn't worth it in the end. Your shitcoin is going to be worthless in the not too distant future, as it really isn't as decentralized as it was claimed to be. Buy Bitcoin, think long term, learn how to use cold storage. Check out the cold card and BTC sessions video on how to use it. Don't worry about the price of Bitcoin. It's going to go up over time. But and who's going to be the winner of all this? SBF. And I mentioned he has lots of capital at his disposal. And right now we're in a massive bear market. And a lot of companies are begging for an infusion of capital. And in fact, it's being reported that he may go up picking up some Bitcoin mining companies that are ripe for being purchased. And what else is he doing? Well, BlockFi, that's the pump pump company, that is ready to go quadriga not too long from now. And it's being rumored it's being given a lifeline by FTX. So BlockFi given some money. How much? The terms? $400 million in revolving credit. That's a lot of money. And there's an option for BlockFi to be purchased for up to a maximum of $240 million. So FTX could purchase BlockFi for $240 million. But that's the maximum. There's also a minimum, but it's not being disclosed. Rumored to be around $25 million. And that's a mere 99% discount from the $4.8 billion that the valuation back in July 2021. But still, I would say BlockFi got better value through this deal than a guy who picked up the NFT of Jack Dorsey's first tweet for $2.9 million. He's still struggling to buy somebody for to buy a pic, buy that picture of the tweet. And FTX, and the news came in that they're not the only ones in town. It looks like Ledin. This is interesting, Joy. I'm not sure if you saw it, but Ledin might be in a mix or has been rumored to be in a mix to purchase BlockFi. And Ledin's offer would involve a fresh funding round, according to a report. The funding would supposedly be up to $400 million and include $50 million in equity. And that would make Ledin one of the largest, if not the biggest, owner of BlockFi. But this is still not confirmed. We got Zach Prince, the Popper CEO of BlockFi. He's denied that this whole FTX story. Could he be bluffing? I don't know. Because he's trying to get a better deal. Who the hell knows? But from what I can see, he's holding an offsuit 2 and 7. So everybody knows he's carrying fuck all in his hand. So it's hard for him to negotiate a better deal. Who's quiet in this whole thing? Pomp. Pomp's been fucking quiet. What's going on? Is he going to talk about NFTs or something moving forward? Who knows? Who fucking cares?
Pomp is tweeting bear market fortune cookie quotes.
It's fucking incredible. But on the topic of scummy people and scummy practices, let's talk about rumors swirling around Nexo. I'm not sure if you saw this one, Joey, but apparently some inside sources, this is unconfirmed, but nonetheless, it's being reported out there that Nexo is liquidating its own users for company profit. Nexo right now allows users to deposit coins on Nexo's network. Is it a deposit? Well, technically it's not. What it is, it really is a lending, an unsecured lend to Nexo. And this is a practice similar to what Celsius was doing. the users then have the ability to borrow against what they supposedly deposited on the Nexo platform. But if the value of the collateral falls to a point below the minimum, well, Nexo liquidates, and they liquidate the collateral, and also there's a 2% fee on top of it. But this 2% fee was not seen anywhere, nowhere in the terms of conditions. They're simply throwing their shit out there to make a profit through the liquidation process. And it's being reported that Nexo is forcing liquidations by manipulating the markets. They could drive down the price of these comparatively thinly traded shitcoins by selling the shitcoins and forcing the Nexo users to get wrecked and to be liquidated. And by driving down the market, they also have the added benefit of paying out less interest rates or less interest to the user base, then throw in a 2% user fee. And on you know, in the end, you have the users holding the bag and Nexo gets wealthier. It's just like, whatever. It's a very eventful week in the DeFi and exchange world. But there's also one last thing. We also have some FUD spreading around on Twitter that what happened in Celsius a few weeks back was being planned in an orchestrated attack by Mike Alfred, Corey Clipston, and Max Kaiser. And being claimed, this is all bankrolled by SBF. Let's chalk this shit up to fiction because it is not true. But what isn't fiction is what we're witnessing right now with the exchanges. There's a lot of them built on shaky grounds. They're going to come crumbling. Leave nothing, absolutely nothing on the exchange. Buy Bitcoin. Don't play stupid games. You're just going to win stupid prizes at the end. Incredible. Joy, I want to hear your thoughts on this fucking joke
here. Incredible monologue. Three Arrows Capital is a gong show. Last week, I think we talked a bit about the Castle Island Venture list of investments, if memory serves. I don't remember if that was us and Mario. I don't know if it was us and Mario or us and or just us talking about maximalism and the whole Nick Carter thing, which we may talk about today. I'm not sure.
It was with Mario.
Right. So that page is making the rounds last week. I'm going to stick in the chat here. So if you're on audio, just you can go to the three aces. You go to the three Arrows Capital website and look at their investments. This is really like a what's what of foolish tomfoolery. Okay. Aave, M Stable, Ardana, which is maybe like someone who's had a couple of beers trying to say Cardano, Multichain, Orca, D Hedge, SYSX. I've never heard of that. Or maybe it's GYGX. I don't know. Theta Knots Finance, Future Swap, Keeper DAO, Trader Joe, probably not affiliated with Trader Joe's. But anyway, most notably on here, Len, Avalanche, Ethereum, Polkadot, Solana, and Terra. Terra still on the Three Arrows Capital website as a base layer investment. They've also got on here BlockFi, and a couple of other like stuff I've never heard of, like Crypto Raiders, Nyan Heroes. Like, this is really just a complete shit show. Like, I don't know who's choosing these investments or like who's managing that portfolio, but it looks like, honestly, it's like Portnoy drawing out Scrabble tiles and heading to Binance and seeing what he can get. That's how it looks to me. Now, there's a lot of like moving parts here. You did a great job covering all that. I got a few more. One I think you're really going to like, okay? Voyager Digital. You mentioned it. Shitcoin platform. Investors in Voyager include Galaxy, Silvergate, and Coinbase. There's a few other ones. Now, Coinbase and Galaxy are invested in a bunch of other stuff that's been brought up and upended in some cases in this whole shebang. Noteworthy, though, Voyager had access to a $75 million credit line during this recent incident. And the credit line was funded by a company called Alameda Research. Do you know who runs Alameda Research?
SBF.
And so this guy, Len, is literally at every bit of help that these guys need. He's there. He's there with the money. He's there trying to get equity. He's there establishing revolving credit or credit lines. He's all over the place. This guy is, you know, like we mentioned, I think 2 weeks ago, bear markets are for consolidation. These moves are so, so big long-term. This guy waited, bought his time, and now he's all over the place with capital. You mentioned it there, and I have it here as well, this 25 million or between 25 and 250, right? Listen, Zach Prince may say that the deal is not 25, but 250 is the top end. And 250 is still not that good compared to the, I think, 4 billion valuation they had.
4.8 or 4.6 billion.
So close to 5 billion they had, right? Mm-hmm. So like really between the difference between 25 and 250 relatively speaking, mm-hmm. it's really not that much. You still completely shit the bed as a company. You've let down all your investors, all your employees, and all your clients. Maybe most importantly, you're completely disgraced, never to be seen or heard from again. If things continue to go sideways. Now, while all this is going on, SBF is, you know, becoming the center of a number of memes. Like, he's got that picture in the bushes. I don't know if you've seen that picture.
Yeah,
great,
everyone has.
Great caption on a couple of them. Like, there's one that says, this is the, what does he say? This is the last thing you see before being acquired or something like that. It's like, so good. Awesome stuff. It's honestly so fucking funny. And he's just got such a friendly face for it, too. So, while all this is happening, you got Zach on the BlockFi subreddit, which I am a subscriber to because I love a good car crash, buddy. And this one has been excellent so far. He's got a post up there. It says a very important message from our CEO, Zach Prince. It's actually posted by one of his lackeys. And so he's got this text. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he basically says that in not so many words that it's the market volatility that is the problem. Len, it is not the market volatility. It's that these people are incompetent risk managers who thought that number could only go up and got the shit kicked out of them at an inopportune time. I can't believe anyone is reading this stuff. Then again, if you're cruising the BlockFi subreddit for reassuring messages, you're probably, you know, some of the lowest IQ people in the industry. Now, on top of this, he says a couple of things I found noteworthy here. Quote, if you're curious about how we're handling market volatility, I encourage you to check out this podcast with Castle Island VC's Matt Walsh. Matt Walsh is Nick Carter's partner on the Brink podcast, and he must work for Castle Island. Castle Island is an investor in BlockFi. This guy really went to a media company that's run by the people who invested in his company to try and get a positive spin. And still, that podcast, by the way, he's squirrely. It's not very beneficial, in my view, to the point of view that he's trying to convey that he was sort of upended by volatility. It's not his fault. And worse, I'm not going to read this whole thing, but it's got more stuff in here about, and I quote again, as a matter of principle, we fundamentally believe in protecting client funds. Len, we read out the interest rates they're paying on these fucking shitcoins last week. 20%, no cap, 15%, no cap, 12%, no cap on garbage. It's trash. This guy doesn't care about protecting client funds. It's fucking obvious to everyone with two brain cells to rub together, right? If you're able to get a hot dog down your throat without dying on America Day, then you're too smart for this bullshit, okay? You're too fucking smart. 200, like I said, 250, not really, you know, a big difference. $5 billion is a lot of money. It's quite a fall from grace, if you ask me. Another one you didn't mention here, Coinbase backed a company called Vault. And earlier today, they halted their withdrawals as well. It's the same companies investing in all these guys, man. Coinbase is another company that, you know, if you're investing in these platforms and they keep demonstrating to you that they're doing fractional reserve or some other like DeFi yield hunting for people in tokens that are actually worthless, who's to say that Coinbase is not doing this? Who's to say that they're not doing it? Doesn't it make more sense that after investing in all these things through Coinbase Ventures, they would be doing this? They would be pursuing that avenue? It makes more sense they would be doing this. I'm not saying they are, but if I had to bet one way or another, with a bullet to my head, I know which way I'd be betting. Mm-hmm. We got a couple of things here I want to talk about before we move on. Like I mentioned, this like market conditions thing, Len, this is really like lowest common denominator communication theory. Everyone who invests in these platforms must do, you know, at the very bare minimum, a little bit of due diligence to find out where the yield is coming from. Like we said before, if you don't understand where the yield's coming from, you are the yield. Okay. That's all there is to it. You're part of the Ponzi scheme if you don't understand where the yield's coming from. And so I encourage people to share with their friends this program, other programs like ours, with some of these documents and tweets and tweet storms and whatnot. Tons of stuff out there. Right. And I'll say this to close here. While Zach and his minions are scrambling to put up shitty Reddit posts and going on the friendliest podcast they can, okay? Do you know what the Ledin director of community is doing? He's coming on our show, shooting the shit about maximalism, shooting the shit about Ledin, shooting the shit about the nomenclature for the mining reward into the sort of mature years of the Bitcoin protocol. And then he's going on a fucking overseas vacation. That's what it looks like to be part of a company that knows what they're doing and knows how to manage risk. Do you think Mario is concerned that Adam or Maurizio is going to call him at 7 a.m. Eastern, God knows what time that is overseas, and be like, hey, can you hop on a quick call or talk to these guys on Reddit? Because we're going to rug pull them, and we don't really want to use the word rug pull. So we're hoping you can maybe spin this in a positive light. Maybe call Joey and Len, see if they'll have you on to facilitate this fucking robbery that we're about to pull on the plebs. That doesn't happen at good companies. And so Mario's enjoying a gelato and a nice red wine while these fucking guys are on Reddit begging people not to sue them, not to pull their funds, and to keep the Ponzi going. Incredible difference. I'm glad that we picked one, and I'm glad the other one is starting to burn to the ground.
We would never have even gotten BlockFi, even if they approached us. Even if Zach Popper came knocking on our door, never would we be even entertaining that notion. Screw that. It was too much shit coins and that stuff.
I don't know a single trustworthy guy named Zach, by the way. I'm 35 years old. I've known a lot of people. I don't know a single trustworthy guy named Zach. Do you?
The guy from Saved by the Bell, he was pretty trustworthy.
Is he trustworthy? I think he got into a lot of trouble on that show, didn't he? I wasn't really a Saved by the Bell guy. That's more your generation than mine.
I guess it is. Yeah. Is that, fuck, I forget his name. Zach Morris. That's it. Zach Morris. Anyways, yeah. Joey, let's move on. There's still tons to talk about, and we're going to be going on the deep end, going to dive deep in this one here because it's about the economy. And this is not only going to impact the price of Bitcoin, Joey, but it's also going to impact how we live our day-to-day life. And in terms of lives, let's talk about those lives in California because they should be getting a heck of a lot better. Because their governor, Gavin Newsom, announced that, and I quote, millions of Californians will be receiving up to $1,050 as part of a new middle-class tax rebate. That is more money in your pocket to help you fill your gas tank and put food on the table, end quote. Essentially, they're going to give out money to a whole bunch of people. So up to $1,050 is going to be handed out. And it's not just for people not earning a lot of money. I'm going to spare you the details, but even people that are earning more than $250,000 US or $500,000 jointly, that's a lot of money. You're still eligible to get $200 for each person plus $200 per dependent up to a maximum of $600. So somebody making or a couple making $1 million will still be getting $600 from the state of California. This is a form of UBI. Everybody, including those making a heck of a lot of money, are going to be subjected to this airdrop money. It's absolutely incredible what's going on over there. This is the new way of doing business. And essentially is create high inflation, devalue the dollar, and as a result, make the debt easier to manage, and then hand out money to residents. Great idea, but rinse and repeat until the process just doesn't work anymore. But if you think about it, it seems like a very elaborate scheme, but I don't think they were clever enough to conjure this one up. This would require careful and long-term planning and somebody with intimate knowledge of the economy and inflation. And why did I think, well, how did I come to this conclusion, Joey? Well, Jerome Powell, he was talking to the U.S. Senate Banking Committee this past week, and he admitted that the Fed was wrong about its inflation expectations. He was fucking wrong about inflation expectations. How the fuck could you be so wrong about, we have centuries of data here that we've accumulated, and including lots of recent and very much applicable examples in the past 100 years. You either have to have your head buried in the sand or up your ass to be wrong about inflation expectations. And who would have guessed drastically increasing money supply in a short period of time and keeping rates extremely low, this would have a negative impact on the economy? Well, who? I have a list here. Let me just take a look. Here it is. Every fucking Bitcoin Twitter out there said it was going to be a fucking disaster. Everybody fucking called it. How the hell could Jerome Powell not understand it? But enough about this. Let's talk about the economics in Canada, United States, and the rest of the world. United States, they should be officially in a recession, right? We have nothing confirmed yet, but we had the bullish Atlanta Fed. They came out this past week, maybe even a day or two ago.
Yo, it's bullish Atlanta
Fed. Oh, but they're not so bullish anymore. They revised their Q2 GDP, and now it's negative. And they also, think about that. We have that confirming that this is a recession, but the only thing we don't have confirming it in totality, we don't have a tweet from the White House or Jim Cramer saying there is no recession. Once we get that, for sure, we got confirmation recession is coming. But one sure way to obliterate an economy is aggressively raise interest rates during a recession. And unless I'm wrong, Joey, the only times they have aggressively increased rates in the middle of a recession was between the years 1973 and 1975.
Len, what happened, Len? What happened around that time? What was it that went down?
I have no idea. It's just all I know is things didn't turn out all that well. And given enough runway, I think I have enough faith in them. They will turn a recession into a depression and expect things to turn really, really bad over the next few months. And I want to talk about housing. And we have a company in the United States called First Guarantee Mortgage Corp, FGMC. It's a mortgage firm in the United States. They filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, laid off nearly 80% of their workforce. They explain it as such, quote, significant operating losses and cash flow challenges due to unforeseen historical adverse market conditions.
Market conditions strike again. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
For the mortgage lending industry, including unanticipated market volatility, end quote. This is shades of 2008, Joey. And the number of residential mortgages was reported down in Q1 2022. Q2 is likely going to be the same thing. Pending house sales in June plunged 16% year over year. In May, we had a 12% drop. The home sales for homes, they're slowing down in the United States. Even for pending home sales, they're down 13% year over year from last year. And forecasts are showing that existing sales for homes, they dropped year over year 4.7% in Q2 2022. So there's a lot of data here to show that in the States, things are not going well with the housing market. But I don't have anything to prove anything in Canada, but I suspect the same thing is going to happen here or is already happening here as the economy slows and interest rates creep up. And this is troubling because I learned something new just with doing this report. Some provinces rely heavily on real estate. In fact, one province, BC, relies almost as much as one-fifth of their GDP comes from the real estate sector. One-fifth of their GDP from the real estate sector. That is nuts. But this is not just something very unique to BC. Nationally, we're 13.5% of our national GDP comes from the real estate, whole real estate market. That's a lot of money that we hitched our wagon onto one particular thing. In fact, they call it real estate and rental and leasing. And this number, a 13.5% nationally, it's creeping up because in 2000, it was 10.7%. 2010, 12.2%. Now it's 13.5%. It's a steady increase up. We continually rely ourselves with the housing market for our GDP to move the GDP in the right direction. But it's going to slow down. So as this thing slows down, it's also going to slow down the economy as a whole in Canada. It's not easy. No, it's not too hard to connect the dots here. But real estate isn't a hot topic solely in Canada and the United States. China, we have a real estate developer called Shimao Group Holdings. They missed out on payments of $1 billion. That's nuts. This past Sunday, it's their first default. This firm also has $5.5 billion in outstanding offshore bonds. That's a lot of money that they have available to them that they may just default. Even in the UK, things are changing over there. They're discussing 50-year mortgages that you could pass to your children. Nothing spells broken system more than a 50-year commitment to be in debt, and the obligation gets passed on to the next generation. But we have the right people in charge in the central banks to ensure that we have a soft landing, right? Probably not. Less and less people out there have faith in them figuring out the system and figuring out what's going on with high inflation, low interest rates, and what would be the outcome. I think we should have equipped these central bankers with copies of Sim Banker as a way to help them learn the ins and outs of the job. It would have been a better way for them to learn what's going on. But another thing, I have some more stats that are going to prove shades of 2008. Equifax reported that 8.5% of subprime borrowers defaulted on their car loans, the second highest on record. The Wall Street Journal also found more subprime borrowers have started missing out on payments as rising inflation makes them choose between essentials and car loans. I have a few more stats before I just pass it off to you. This is nuts. 58% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. This includes 30% of those earning $250,000 or more in a given year. The consumer confidence is the lowest since 1950. The stock market is having
I got all these stats right down.
Worst year since 1970.
Mortgage demand the lowest since 2001. Credit card debt up 20% in 1 month, just one fucking month.
Yeah.
And we have good news though. Biden is going to be rolling back some of the tariffs. Looks like that's been in place on China. That's a way to combat inflation. Love it. This is knee-jerk reaction after knee-jerk reaction. This is why we are in the fucking problem we are in. We are absolutely fucked. I say this every week, but it's so true. The next few months is going to be absolutely nuts. Keep your eyes open and buy Bitcoin. That's the only way out.
It's coming faster and faster. So you obviously read the same thing I did from Kobezi letter. Hey, that Twitter account. That's where I got. I have all this stuff right now. 50% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck. I will just pour a little bit of cold water on that. That figure is so the 30% of making 250, right? That was the number. So I'll just say that that number is reflective of a question that asks, how much money do you have left in between paychecks after necessary spending, discretionary, and investing? So people who make $250,000, I doubt they keep a lot of cash. I think I would probably qualify as someone who lives paycheck to paycheck in that with that framing. So I'll just say that. Now, it doesn't mean that people are not living paycheck to paycheck. Of course they are. But it's an interesting stat. You mentioned the Atlanta Fed finally now forecasting negative 2.1% growth for the quarter. It's over. It ain't going to get better, okay? Also note that unlike last America Day, you'll note that the White House didn't tweet out today but what the barbecue is going to cost you compared to last year, did they? They fucking pretty quiet this year, huh? It's okay, Len. I saw a great tweet. You can go and cover some of the extra $67 you have to pay this year for the barbecue with the 16 cents you saved last year. Joe Biden's America, as they say. Now, I found out today, and this is probably going to, color me as a naive fool or something, but the Cleveland Fed, so many feds out there, the Cleveland Fed does a nowcast for inflation. Did you know this?
No.
They got a nowcast for inflation. And so they're saying after one day, they're predicting that the inflation rate is going to jump by 0.3%. And so Jim Bianco from Bianco Research, we talked about on the show before, and Darius Dale from 42 Macro, who's a frequent guest on Macro Voice, is very good. He may have been on recently, actually, but they didn't really talk about inflation. They talked about some other stuff. They're also both suggesting that you're going to get inflation into the beginning of the NFL season at least. So that's September, October. The question I think we got to ask ourselves is what number is going to be enough for the Fed to back off of rate hikes? Because you can't keep having inflation and raising rates. There has to be a number where they stop raising rates because people are going to be drowning. You're seeing protests and unrest all over the place now, and it's starting to creep toward Western first world economies. So with all this said, we got to think about what that number is, because it seems to me that it's going to have to start with a 7 for more than 1, 2, 3 consecutive months before they consider stopping those hikes. I want to say that, where did I have that here? Is it in this part of the notes? No, it's not. We'll get to it in a sec, but oh no, here it is. So the rate market, right now, do you know what the rate market thinks the first month of cuts is going to be?
March of 2023?
May 2023. So shout out to our guy, Massa Capital, for helping me with that. He's got a terminal and he's able to see all that stuff. Now we've talked on the show a bit before about, the contraction of the balance sheet in America, this QT that they claim they're going to be doing, and they're going to really get things in order with this monetary contraction policy. TXMC, who I would love to get on the show, he's a smart guy, has a great tweet today. QT looking sluggish out of the gate. In the month of June, the Fed was only able to reduce its balance sheet by $7.5 billion, Len. The maximum they could claw back is $45 billion. So they didn't even get close. They're not doing anything.
Okay? You know how many years it's going to take for them to clear that off?
Buddy, so many, I'll be long. My head will be in a jar, or I'll be long.
500 years, I think the number they were saying.
Yeah, no problem. I'm sure. That's what Christine Lagarde means when she says in due time. Because I'm pretty sure she's like an immortal skeleton witch or something. But anyway, mortgage-backed securities, Len. The Fed increased their total value of mortgage-backed securities by $2 billion. In the first month of QT.
They're going to be the bag holders.
They added to the bag. It's unbelievable. They added to the bag. Unpopular opinion here in the Bitcoin space, okay? There's a lot of charts floating around that show fertility rates for the year. Mm-hmm. Very low compared to the year before. Now, I'm going to stay on the straight and narrow here for the YouTube overlords and say that it is not due to a medical intervention of dubious utility at the moment. So what I will say is that fertility rate just measures the births per adult woman, and it's very low. It's very low. My suggestion to you would be that the reason it's low is because people can't afford to have kids. They just can't do it. They can't afford to get a house. They can't afford to feed their food. They can't afford to feed their families. They can't afford to drive a car. They can't afford to heat their apartment. They can't afford to do any of this stuff. In California, like you mentioned, we see this helicopter money policy. I'll just mention here again, like as far as Dicey takes, if you can't have kids, it generally means that people don't have money, and you got to, you know, help that with immigration. And I'll just say, like, again, touchy subject, demographics are your destiny. And if your demographics are a bomb waiting to go off, you're going to get these policies that that wind up with helicopter money as the fix, right? California, we see it. People with no money, no work, and probably no brain begging for checks without considering long-term effects. And I don't want to say it's just because they're stupid, though I'm sure many of them are. I think it's also because short-term, you need to eat and clothe and have shelter. You can't consider long-term effects of the helicopter money if you're worried about putting food on the table. You just can't do it. So I don't want to hold that against them. But we're seeing that in Canada and more. Friend of the show, Jagmeet Singh, today tweeting out that to help with inflation, we have to give everyone $1,000. This guy's I was just about to say the word that we're not supposed to say. He's a fool. He's a fool. Like, how can you, Len, how can you say that out loud? To fix the problem, we got to give everyone $1,000 more. What is going on? These are unserious people at every turn. Okay. It's ridiculous. Also, as an aside, there's a chart floating around from Our World in Data. I don't know. That's probably a magazine of some kind of publication that indicates life expectancy. And I'll share my notes screen here for a second, which is, again, great content for the audio side. But you should be watching on video too, because that way you get the full experience. Let me get this up.
Watch it multiple times in video too.
Yeah. So you see this chart, life expectancy? Like, this is a bit alarming, isn't it? That the U.S. basically flatlined, decreased a bit for the 15 years or so, starting in 2005.
Yeah, it's the first time in forever that there's been a drawdown.
But it hasn't reconciled itself. It's still here. Like, it's still flat. This is not good, man. This is very much not good.
You could speculate why that's the reason.
Yeah, yeah. Len, there's a million reasons, but like the point is that the quality of life in America is decreasing. It's going down. The life expectancy is going down. The affordability is going down. Everything is going down. It's going the wrong direction. And on America Day, I hate to say that, but it's just the way that this is. Okay, Europe on the other hand is, they got multiple countries over there now discussing rationing food, fuel. I saw a tweet today that, was it Germany or one of these countries going to ration hot water? They're rationing hot water, Len. These are third world problems creeping into places that have Rolls-Royce dealerships and Rolex stores, you know, on shopping streets that are all geared toward high-income earners. This is not what a first world country looks like. And yet here we are flying under the radar through all this. I think especially for Bitcoiners is that the euro is approaching parity with the dollar, all while Europe is experiencing this unrelenting inflation. That eurozone experiment is about to fail. It looks like it's about to fail. It's never been like this before. You can't have a country where or a monetary jurisdiction where everyone knows you have to print to survive. Everyone knows you can't keep raising rates. They're doing selective quantitative easing. I don't know if you know that, which is the first time they've ever done that. They're trying to tighten in some places and ease into others to protect the bond market. Italy, great example right now of a bond market that needs
protection. It's a basket case.
It's a nightmare. And so this is to me like an experiment that's about to fail. Zero Hedge today, great tweet as well. Germany is about to turn into a net importer over the next month. They haven't been a net importer in 40 fucking years. This whole thing, okay, is going to come crashing down at some point. Now, there may be some hedonics, there may be some media spin, there may be some political messaging to try and ease the pain, to try and take the edge off for most people. But like we said before, monetary issues and issues with inflation are the thing that cannot be explained away. They cannot be explained away. Okay. So what is the plan when all this stuff comes crashing down? You got to have Bitcoin. I'll just, before I pass it back to you, Arthur Hayes, often wrong about price calls, but very sharp on macro. The thing that I said on Ben's show, why are we bullish? I think at the beginning of the summer, maybe it was like in April or May, something like that, was that the decoupling is going to come fast, but it's going to be ugly at first. And I think, Len, there's a real chance that we're about to get into the ugly part of this. Like you said.
For sure.
I think this is really going to hit modern economies in a way that modern economies have never been hit, and in a way that modern economies can't have Trevor Noah, Stephen Colbert, and John Oliver dance in a monkey suit to try and spin it in a positive light. It's just going to be too hard. And I'm not looking forward to it, but I think that Bitcoin is really, really important in a defensively structured portfolio for what comes next. I don't see, even if you don't love Bitcoin, I guarantee you don't have a better idea. I guarantee you don't, because there's nowhere to hide. There's nowhere to hide. It was oil and energy, but demand destruction is coming fast and furious. People are not willing to do these things the way they were before. Discretionary is taking a hit, and this is going to continue. It's just going to continue. If you don't have Bitcoin now, like I don't know what to tell you. I think you're very close to missing the boat here, honestly.
If you go back just a few years, Joy, say go back 5 years in your life and think about how good it was for somebody that has some money living in the Western world. You go to the store, shelves are always full. You want to get something, you simply order it and it gets sent to your house. There's going to be not too long of a wait. Everything was there. It's just available. You turn on the light switch, light turns on. You open a tap, running water, clean running water comes out. This doesn't happen in all parts of the world. Eventually, we're going to have to start suffering. All these goodies that we have right now, it's unaffordable if we start to pay the piper. We can't continually print, devalue the money, and still live the way that we live. Something has to give. And it's going to be very, very difficult for a lot of people to adjust, and myself included. I'm not going to say it's going to be very simple, but for me, I could recognize the fact that there has to be changes in everybody's lives. It's not going to be the same it was a few years ago. The next few years, it's going to be troubling. And I'll go back. I don't want to see the system fail, because with the system failing means it's going to be very, very difficult life for all of us. But I could see what's going to happen. Some things are inevitable, and I have no control what is going to be the outcome as a whole. I can control what happens to me, and that's what I'm doing with Bitcoin. But the system itself, no matter how hard I try, it will fail. It's doomed to fail. No fiat currency has survived in its history. And this is going to prove itself just to be another one in the history of fiat currencies that just disappeared. It's sad, but just be very careful. Try to prepare for the future, because the future is going to be very, very difficult for a lot of people moving forward. If you have our hard assets, I say Bitcoin being one of them, homes is another one. It's easy for me to say, but if you have one, fight tooth and nail to keep that, because it's a massive thing to have. And it's not to say they can't take it away from you, but it makes life a lot easier once you have one. Just, yeah, I don't know. Anything else you want to add before we transition to the Canadian side?
I mean, try and stay positive, you know, get in shape, do something to take your mind off this stuff. That's what we do. But like I said, Bitcoin, I think, man, you know, even Peter Schiff probably going to be buying some given recent events. So
the irony of it all, isn't it? For those who are unaware, his Puerto Rican, I think it was, bank account was...
He owns Euro Pacific Capital. I don't want to step on the toes if this is a story, but he owns Euro Pacific Capital, but he also chartered a bank in Puerto Rico and didn't meet the capital requirements for the bank that he opened. And was on Twitter today talking about how they closed it. They didn't give him any warning. Now he's going to lose money. He already put like $7 million into trying to keep this thing open the last 2 years.
Irony of it all, eh? Like, if only he simply ran his own node, mined his own Bitcoin, and used a cold card, he would not have any of these problems. But he's dealing with in the traditional legacy financial world. Unfortunately, you have to deal with the rules that they
they put upon
you. Len, I'm dying to hear his next podcast. I turned on his podcast first thing this morning, hoping he'd be talking about it, but he's not ready yet. He's probably out now, or it's got to be close to being ready. Yochi, my Shake Squad is called Euro Pacific Capital. That's great.
All right, let's move on. We'll go on to the Canadian news. And the very first thing I want to talk about, and we touched upon it briefly last week with Mario with his interview, is Aladdin has released their July rates. It's been unchanged. So the rates for July 1st through the whole duration of July are as follows. With balances up to 0.1 BTC, you're going to earn 5.25% APY. And balances over 0.1 BTC, you're going to earn 2.0 APY. USDC interest rates stay at 7.5 APY. So yeah, that's what I have to say. No change from the month of June. No surprise there. So if you're still using Ledin, you just know exactly what you're going to get, the same as last month. So yeah, I'm not sure if you want to add anything more to that, Joey.
Most importantly, no change in trustworthiness of the platform. That's the only delta I'm looking at these days, and it's a zero for them. Outstanding.
Proof of reserves, it will be coming up, from what I understand, later this month or something. It's due relatively soon. So they do a periodically 6 month duration, and the last one they did was in January. So July should be another one, but that's a topic for another time. I do want to talk about Ontario housing targets, and I talked about housing a little bit in depth earlier in the episode. Apparently, the Ontario government, or Ontario, who maybe an agency, or I'm not sure who it is, but they have a goal. They want to build 1.5 million homes in a 10-year period, and this is going to help reach a target where it will be more attainable to find homes and drive down the price. The problem with this, they want to build 1.5 million in a 10-year span. They have never, ever completed 1 million in a 10-year span. So yeah, they want to increase this significantly in order to meet whatever goal they want to achieve. And this is at a time, as of right now, where supply chain issues is causing problems. So if you want to ramp up the production of homes, even in the best of times, we never got there. Now it's the worst of times. You know, it's a lofty goal. I wish them a lot of credit with trying to achieve it, but I have real problems with them thinking about, you know, that they'll get there. So good on them for putting these lofty goals, but good luck achieving them. I have a better chance of stepping my foot on the moon.
How about this chart here? That this is kind of about the last story too, but as far as like what 1.5 million homes would do for us over a 10-year period, take a look at that Canadian residential investment line there. Can you see how that line spikes going upward? Mm-hmm. Like if you build 1 million more homes, it's not going to solve the problem. Home construction is like adding lanes on a highway. Okay. If you add lanes on a highway to fix traffic, you don't fix traffic. You just get more traffic. You know, you just get more congestion, more cars. Housing is the same. If you build houses, somebody will buy them and the prices will continue to go up because the government will support people who want to buy the homes who can't afford them, blah, blah, blah. We all know the story. This isn't new. I have a hard time believing that anyone with a brain thinks they're going to be able to build 1.5 million homes when we haven't built 1 million in the past. And by the way, all the commodity inputs into home building now are 10 times what they were 15 years ago, right? 5 times what they were 15 years ago. Where are we getting all this money? Industry is not going to shell out that money for homes that are not worth anything. Like something's got to give. Either the home values go up and then industry builds them and still you can't afford the house, or the home values go down, industry refuses to build them, and home values go up anyway because the supply is in a crunch. This is not that hard to figure out. It feels like I'm taking crazy pills sometimes doing this show because I didn't see that story before you gave it to me. And in 30 seconds, I can put that together. How come they can't put it together? What am I missing? Am I missing something there? Can you help me out? What do you think?
No, you're missing absolutely nothing. They're the ones that are missing the reality. Like economists, they're throwing darts on the dartboard to figure out what is going to be the new goals for how many houses they want to... Like, forget it. It's better not to think about it. It's out of our hands. The more you think about it, the more your BP is going to go up and you have no control over this, right? So let's just grin and bear it.
Oh, you know, and more Bitcoin. I don't know, man. I hear these, like I hear people on other, like Harris Kupperman. If you guys ever listen to Market Huddle, which by the way, I want to get Patrick Sarezna and Kevin Muir on the show and to do a bear segment to tell me why we're wrong about Bitcoin. I think those guys are great, but they have Harris Kupperman on, Cuppy, as he's known on Twitter. And even those guys are laughing at this number. Like, it is impossible to build 1.5 million houses in Canada. You can't do it. It's never been done. And that was, like I said, before all these other factors. And so I, you know, it's frustrating as a Canadian to hear my American friends, you know, giving me shit too. It's, it sucks, especially on America Day.
Yeah. Think happy thoughts, but you know, who's not going to be thinking happy thoughts are landlords in the province of Ontario, because although Ontario approved the largest rent hike in a decade, the rent hike which they are unable to impose on their renters is only 2.5% for the year of 2023. And everybody knows that the CPI for Canada, we just passed 7%, 7.7% as of last month. So 2.5% increase really isn't a lot that homeowners can collect in excess from last year. It's definitely not helping out the renters too. The renters obviously are trying to make ends meet with the price of gas going up, with the price of groceries going up. So now they're going to have to also contend with 2.5% increase for their rent as well. And if you want to use a comparable, in 2022, the increase was 1.2%. So 2023, the increase is going to be 2.5%. It's a little bit better, but on a homeowner side, it looks really bad because the price of servicing and owning a home obviously has gone up, including the interest rates spiking too. But on a renter side, it sucks as for them as well, because they also have to dish out an up to 2.5% extra for their rent. So everybody's taking it up the rear end, and it's not looking good on all fronts.
Heaven forbid you have to pay an extra 2.5% in an environment where the guy who's taking the most risk, and by the way, like, you can't be evicted from a rental property. It's impossible. It's like the most uphill battle the province has to offer a regular citizen is evicting someone, a tenant, who hasn't paid their rent. And this idea that 2.5%, as Plate Liquor in the chat saying, like, they're upset because it's the biggest hike ever. Like, 2.5%. If you can't afford 2.5%, I'm sorry. Like, you got to go back and live with your parents. You got to live in subsidized housing. You got to do CMHC. You got to do something. If you can't do 2.5, you can't do it. But I got to be able to make ends meet. All my inputs are going up, as we know. All my commodity prices, all my service costs, all my maintenance costs, they're all going up. My taxes, it's all going one way. And it's not going up by 2.5% a year. It's going up way more than that. So bite the pillow and pay the extra cost, or GTFO. I'll find someone else who can rent. I should mention here that if you are a landlord, you can, of course, do a rent eviction with a family member. Exactly. Yeah. So these things. Listen, it's doable. get a lawyer, pay the $5,000 to the lawyer and make sure it's all ironclad, and get these bums out of there, man.
Okay. I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I don't totally believe this, but on the flip side, as the person renting, what's going on with your hair there, Joey?
Something going on? I'm getting upset.
So on the flip side, and you know, you could bite my head off. Imagine you're the guy that's paying the rent and your wages aren't going up with the cost of inflation, which is the 7.7%. And that's just the official numbers. In reality, it's much higher. So you're losing money on all different fronts. But now on top of that, your rent is going up 2.5%. So I could see it from their eyes. They're pissed off as well. But as you mentioned, the homeowner is taking on all the risk, and the environment is changing very drastically, and more so negatively towards the homeowners. But everybody's taking it. It's not just the homeowners and renters too. It's a pretty sad situation all around.
The homeowners, the landlords take the risk. Mm-hmm. And so if there's ever wiggle room to be had, it should go to the people who are taking the risk, not the people who are not taking the risk. There's options for you. This is the thing. The other thing I don't like, this is going to make me sound like such a dickhead, but it's not that you can't live at that rent level, but you can't stay in the nicest place in the neighborhood and rent it at 10-year-old prices. This isn't the case anywhere in anything, any product, service, commodity, input, output, doesn't matter. Everywhere you go, the prices go up by more than 2.5% a year. If you don't like this, go live in a single bedroom apartment somewhere in a worse area of the town and find a way to better your situation. But you don't get to hold prices where you want them because what? You supported the commie coffee shop in Toronto for $7 a cup and bought a tote bag there too, a canvas tote bag to carry around nothing because you can't afford shit. Like, come on. It's not my problem as a homeowner, is it? I don't think it is. So,
ladies and gentlemen, I just want you to be aware the stance where Joey is coming from. he at one time was dealing with a landlord with the email address. What was the email address for
Slumlord1969? Do not email him, but it was Slumlord1969. So, he's my third year landlord.
So there you go. So you have to walk a mile in somebody's shoes to understand where they're coming from.
And Len, that guy was a dick too. He charged us too much. Like, he charged us too much money. I paid too much money every year when I was in school, but if I wanted to pay less, I had to move to a shittier part of town. So what did I do? I worked more in the summer. Okay. Do you think Zellers was fun to work at? It wasn't fun. I worked more in the summertime, spent less on Molson Canadian pitchers at the bar, and paid the extra way, man. Like, that was where I wanted to live. Me and my buddies wanted to live there. That's what we did. You know, like, God damn, it's not that hard to figure out, is it? I don't think it is. And I'm not that old. I'm not even of the uphill both ways generation. I'm a pampered millennial, and still I get this.
I could get him riled with just a few comments. So, but we'll move on. There's still quite a bit to talk about. In Ontario, recently we had gas taxes. They were cut by the province of Ontario, and 5.7% per liter is now going to be saved for until the duration of this year. So the rest of the year, it's going to be on sale by 5.7% off. Sorry, 5.7 cents per liter off. And although it's going to go to the end of the year, the premier is considering even extending it beyond that should inflation remain high. And this tax cut is expected to cost the province $645 million while it's in effect. So that's a significant amount. But to consider also, they removed the Ontario license plate renewals. That's going to also cost the government an additional $1.1 billion. So I know this kind of, I'm really going into the weeds here, but the combination of the two is approaching $2 billion in totality. Ontario's budget last year was $200 billion. So that's almost 1% of the budget that's, you know, has to be costed out somewhere else. Either they're going to have to cut spending or increase taxes or something else. I mean, be very creative. They can't do it in the province. There's no money creation. It's done by the federal government.
There's debt creation though. There's debt creation at the provincial level.
That's the same thing. And that's what's going to be done here. So every time you do something like this, you cut back on a fee. In this case, the 5.7 cents per liter, or this Ontario stickers. We're going to pay it in the end. It's going to be paid down the road. It's kicking the can down the road. So you may celebrate it, and it may be a good thing right now, but in the long run, it's definitely going to hurt us because it's going to be more debt you're going to have to tack on. You're going to have to service more debt as a result, and it just spirals out of control. So yeah, good on them for cutting the taxes on gas, but it's going to hurt us in the long run. So unfortunately, nothing is for free. He's shaking his head.
What is there to say? I feel like this is so obvious. Like, there's no free lunch. Although it looks like Doug Ford has had a million free lunches in his life. I guarantee none of this stuff is gonna be magically somehow not accounted for in your balance book, in my balance book, everyone else's, you know, balance books. It's is all gonna come from somewhere. The question is where and when. Where and when. And we're getting like this whole kick the can down the road thing. The end of the road is getting near. It's getting near. You can see it now almost where you couldn't see it 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Now it's within, you know, it's within sight. So I don't know, man. Great. I guess I'm happy enough to wait in line at Service Ontario for a sticker. That's a nightmare, but it'd be worth it. I don't know.
Pearson. It's a disaster.
My wife just ordered her passport, like sent away her stuff for a passport. I think.
Oh, is she planning to travel by 2024?
We're supposed to go somewhere in the fall. So
yeah, good luck. Yeah,
exactly.
Even if you do, your luggage will never be seen again. Forget it. It's going to be sent to Antarctica or something like that.
I know.
I just want to say that the chat is rocking. And hello to Aiden. He's a first time listener. He's a Spotify.
Aiden, what's up, man? What's up?
Yeah,
got a lot of familiar faces here. Steven is here. Our buddy from Florida, Yochi Jordab, Yellow Plate Liquor. All you guys, man, you're crushing it. You're crushing
the guy
it.
From Colorado. I forget his name. He
Bogues. Bogues.
Yeah,
is here
Bogues.
Too.
Bugsy Bogues. Yeah,
this year. I know. NBA great.
All right. And the last story I have, it seems a lot of Ontario stuff today. So my apologies to the rest of Canada. An Ontario man was scammed out of $55,000 and he actually got his money back. So this story is
a dude by the name of Alan Jones. He became interested in investing in quote unquote cryptocurrencies. And this happened last summer. This was at the you know,
did you just say the guy's name was Alex Jones?
Alan.
Oh, thank God.
Alan Jones. No, Alex Jones, he lost his Bitcoin, didn't he?
We can't even talk about Alex Jones. I'm pretty sure we'll get banned for that too.
Oh, sorry. We're not talking. We're talking about Alan Jones.
Alan Jones.
Yeah. Who's this Alex guy? Anyways, this dude, he bought one Bitcoin. He bought some Bitcoin. And he went online to see how to trade it. This is a fucked up story. So he Googled and researched something, and it was a software program on how to trade Bitcoin. And he found a program worth $350. He purchased it and he downloaded it to his computer. The company called him offering to help him install it. And they got remote access. And through that, they stole his Bitcoin. But apparently there was an investigation. He reported this to the RCMP, and the RCMP did some investigation, and somehow they recovered the funds and they reverted back to him. And when he got it back, he converted it into cash and put in his bank account. He plans to be more careful with his investments moving forward. There's a lot to this. So this dude here, he bought Bitcoin. How did he buy Bitcoin and then go look for a program and buy that program to trade it? Wherever you bought the Bitcoin, you could presumably trade it from where you bought
trade
it from.
But you can't trade it well. The program helps you trade it true. Well.
This program is going to be the be all and end all. But then he said he's going to be more careful with his investments in the future. So he bought Bitcoin last summer. It may have been $28,000, $30,000. And he sold it now when it's around $20,000. That's a shitty investment. You're not being careful with your investment. You're being stupid with your investments. I'm sorry, Mr. Jones. It's a stupid decision you made here. But I just found it ironic. How did they find this money? They didn't. They were very light on details. But somehow this was found, returned back to him. I'm wondering if they used Clue from Big Digital Assets subsidiary. I forget the name of it, but anyways, Big Digital Assets offers blockchain intelligence or analysis services. I'm wondering if they use that to help track this down. But anyways, very interesting stuff. Sometimes you get scammed and it's not lost all the time. In this case, you got to recover. So good for Mr. Jones, but bad for selling it.
Mr. Jones counting his crows before they hatched. But good joke there if you like 90s music, and if you don't, well,
let's start now.
On to the next story.
Okay, well, that's it for the Canadian news, and I do have a few rest of the news stories I want to talk about. Compass Mining had another eventful week. So
another terrible tire fire.
Well, their CEO Whit Gibbs and their CFO,
friend of the show, Whit Gibbs.
They both resigned amid setbacks and disappointments. And they say through this restructuring, the company is wholly focused on regaining the goodwill of our stakeholders and the community, as well as delivering on our mission of providing best-in-class service for miners of all sizes. I don't know. I mean, they have a black eye on their company. It's going to be very difficult for them to rebuild on that what's happened here, because once you lose the trust of people, it's very difficult, dare I say impossible, to regain it. And they have a large and very long uphill battle to fight here, and they're doing it in a bear market. So there's so many negatives around this. I'm wondering what's going to happen with Compass moving forward, if they just might go tips up in not too distant future. I wouldn't be surprised.
How much money are they paying McCormick for him to keep those ads at the front of his show after the last 3 weeks? They got to be paying him a boatload of cash. It's got to be a huge amount.
Yeah, and I've replied to one of his tweets saying that he's because he was talking about he's still going ahead with having them as sponsors. But why? I mean, and I've said this, if any of our sponsors turn into bad actors, They're gone.
There's no warning. Like,
the reason why so many companies have approached us to sponsor them, and we've turned them down. And because the reason being is, if we're going to talk about something, I want to say that we use it and we're confident in it, and it's not a scam. I'm not trying to say anything about Compass and this, but in terms of doing something negative to their customer base.
No, they're kind of a scam now, I think.
Maybe. I just want to, but they have done some things negatively to their customers. I mean, it's something not them. It was sometimes a circumstantial, but still, their customers have been harmed as a result. If the same thing happened to the companies that sponsor us, they'd be no longer sponsors for us.
plain and simple.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like, that's sort of an aside on the Compass story. The other thing I would say is like, man, you know, I think I went back and listened to that WIT episode, or at least skimmed it. And like, I think asked him good questions. And I think I said this last week, that was probably the most assertive we've been in an interview, because we knew what the problems were. We had a lot of inside info from people who are using that service, sending us messages about the service. That's why we asked for them in the first place, because we had some of that info and we, you know, passed it along to them, basically said, look, here's what we're hearing, here's what we're going to talk about. Do you want to come on and front run this? So they did, to his credit. I think Witt's a good guy. I think he probably got in a little over his head. And I think that's true about many companies in the space, as we're seeing. So I'd be curious what comes out of his camp next. And I also want to hear what Compass has to say. They've been still, in my view, and I think unless you've heard something else, eerily quiet, right? They talked about that that C-suite shakeup, but otherwise I haven't heard anything. I haven't heard anything about customer satisfaction, changes to the output expectations, anything like that. So what are they doing? I really have no idea.
They've, in terms of what happened with Dynamics 3K, or what, I forget the name of the company, I'll call it just Dynamics moving forward, they're very quiet on that, because they're standing by with the fact that there's litigation ongoing and they can't speak. Now, Dynamics has been running spaces periodically. They ran one as recently as yesterday or 2 days ago. And I didn't stick around all that long. But the fact that you're doing it, you're getting two different sides of the stories. You get one saying they can't speak about it because it's currently in front of the courts. And the other side, you're getting, they are talking about it. And I don't know who to believe, what to believe.
Talking about it a lot.
Yeah, they're being frank about the whole situation as well. But it is, there's nothing I can change about it. You know, not your ASICs, not your machines. And yeah,
like,
yeah,
Bitcoin just says, right? If it's not your garage rig, it's not your hash.
I love
that.
True
story, man. True story.
And here's a story that's kind of similar to that. Luxor, they're launching hosting marketplaces for Bitcoin miners. And this marketplace will offer hosting clients in the US and Canada, with miners able to have as little as one mining rig hosted by some providers. And it's not what you think in totality. So Luxor will essentially play the role as a broker, matching miners with the needs of their machines being plugged into a hosting provider. So you have a facility that has power, presumably an electric plant or a power producing plant, and you have miners that don't have enough power. They have ASICs that need to be plugged in somewhere. Luxor is going to be bridging the two and making sure that they're able to plug in those miners into the available areas that have excess electricity and making it work. So this is a different way of approaching what Compass is doing. I think this is really interesting. I don't know exactly how it's going to play out. Luxor, I think, is a good player, a good actor in this field. I have nothing against them. So there's no strikes against them as of yet. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Seems like a cool initiative. I hope this works out and it doesn't turn into another Compass fiasco.
Bitcoin in the chat saying Luxor has links to bad actors from the last bull run. I'm going to take word for it. I don't know. I'm going to take his word for it. This is a man who knows his stuff, as far as I can tell. So, I have such a small appetite for any service like this at the moment, any of it. You know, Ledin is the only place I'm willing to put any risk at all. I think it's very low risk. But I look at companies like this and I think, like, why can't they be the next thing to blow up? Why can't it be them?
Could be.
It can. It can. That's the fact of the matter, is that it can. And, you know, until this thing washes over and I can see all the bodies, I'm just not interested, period.
Yep. Stephen Andrews, who's on the chat, I'm not sure if he's the one that was talking about MicroStrategy. Somebody was mentioning MicroStrategy several times, and Michael Saylor. I just want to make note that MicroStrategy this past week purchased an additional 480 Bitcoins, and that's as a value of $10 million. The average price of that purchase is $20,817. If you look at my block clock, so they took a haircut around $700 per Bitcoin as of right now. They're holding almost 130,000 Bitcoin in totality, acquired for almost $4 billion. And the average purchase price is a little bit over $30,664. It's the first time we heard MicroStrategy make a purchase in quite some time. They've been quiet. This has been very bearish for a little while. I'm just maybe it's just that they're running out of capital or the ability to purchase Bitcoin. But yeah, they purchased another 480 recently. Very cool stuff, driving down their average cost price. And yeah, if there's one thing Michael Saylor is, he's a Bitcoin bull, and he keeps proving it over and over again.
They DCA just like you and me, buddy. One of us, one of us. That's what you like to see.
And another one of us is Nayib Bukele. He tweeted this past week that El Salvador purchased 80 Bitcoin at a price of $19,000 each. So again, looking at the block clock, they made about $1,000 for Bitcoin. So that's a pretty good purchase in totality. I think their average purchase price is still around at the 40s, low 40-ish thousand. So they're swimming very deep underwater from the original purchase price. But they bought another 80. Yeah, small number, but you know, it's a token purchase. It looks like more than anything. I like it. Good for them. I hope this works out, because if it does not, it's going to set back the adoption of Bitcoin as a currency situation quite some time. So a lot hinges on the success of El Salvador. Everybody, let's travel to El Salvador. Leave our hard-earned money over there, because they sure need it to make this thing work.
Friend of the show, Jaime Garcia, a little back and forth with Alex Gladstein on Twitter the other day. Did you see that? Talking
no.
About this, Jaime is of the opinion, I have no reason not to believe him, that there's a active coup attempt going on in El Salvador.
Oh, I did see that. It was
discussing a political opposition member basically calling for a coup on national TV and blah, 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 some other stuff too, you know, gang related, I believe. So, you know, maybe time to get Jaime back on and talk to him about what's going on over there, because he's the man with the knowledge. He seems to have some ties to the country, obviously, being from there. And be curious to hear his thoughts. A lot going on over there at the moment. Great buy, though. Happy about the buy. Nayib Bukele just buys enough that he can send out a couple of heater memes on the day that he buys and disappears until another price dip.
He's got gang warfare to deal with over there. So that's just thinking of both of his time. Some interesting news that came out of the Samsung camp, and they have announced that Bitcoin mining may become more efficient because there's a new Samsung chip that is going to be released. And this might help spur some competition in the ASIC industry. Recently, we had Intel jump in the game, and now they're starting to ship some of their new equipment. And if Samsung does the same, this would be absolutely fantastic, because competition leads to great things for the end user, drives down the cost, it creates more efficiencies all around. I like it. I'm skeptical to see if it's going to be any good, but we'll see what happens. If they say that this is going to be more efficient, let's see, let's, you know, prove it and let's go from there. Could be a big boom from Bitcoin mining moving forward.
Marty had on TFTC the guy who is the, I don't know if he's a CEO of Brains, but he's some guy. Was it the CEO?
It was somebody high up from Brains, yeah.
Very. And he's speaking along the same lines, that basically as far as like chip and whatnot quality, you're basically seeing like the end of the cycle here. And so now the gains are going to be made in efficiencies. And it's interesting that this is a story you came up with, because that's something I heard on the podcast, and now I'm hearing it a few other places too. And Bitcoin in the chat, ultra low power usage through new design should be very competitive. I'm looking forward to seeing this, man, because all I hear when this stuff comes around is home mining is going to get more accessible. The more efficient, the quieter, the more, you know, sort of deflationary, like all tech, as Jeff Booth likes to say, becomes, the more opportunities for people to jump in at home and start their KYC free stack. And I'm all about this, man. I can't wait to see what happens.
And I think Intel was, last I recall, was around 20 watts per terahash or something like that. It was something that it's a very competitive number. Like it's eclipsed the S19s in terms of efficiency. But anyways, well, let's just wait for everything to be released from Samsung before we go any further. And looks like the last story I have, I just want to touch base on Central African Republic. We see that we touched upon this not too long ago, the Sango Initiative. Remember, this is fueled. The funding is from the World Bank. So I found this to be pretty ironic, but they're embracing NFTs and the metaverse. So there's a reason why we're not hearing a lot from Central African Republic with regards to Bitcoin, is because they're shitcoining. And for better or for worse, this is the path they're going to be walking. And you know what? Let's hope they don't turn into another Celsius, another BlockFi, another Voyager Digital. And the road is littered with a lot of these shitcoin companies, and this could be a shitcoin country. So good luck, all the best, but I think I know the result.
At the risk of giving you more firepower for your Coinbase bag, do you know who a big sponsor of the initiative is for Central African Republic to do this whole tokenization/NFT thing?
I think I read it. It went out in one year, not the other for me. So Coinbase, but somebody else was involved too.
There's a couple of them, but Coinbase Ventures is in there. Yeah. Like disaster after disaster for these guys. Just a gong show over there too. Unreal, man.
But you know, whatever. Effort doesn't always reach the promised land. But in this case, it's a lot of shitcoinery going on. So it is garbage. So that's it for the news stories. Want to transition to the Bitcoin or Nocoiner of the week. I have one of each. What about you, Joy?
I'm going to give one controversial Bitcoiner of the week and no Nocoiner of the week.
Okay. This segment of the show is brought to you by Tahini's Restaurant. I believe there's now 14 locations. The 14th in Waterloo. We'll be opening up this Sunday, if I recall correctly. So check them out. The one that's opening up in Waterloo, it's going to be 50% off all wraps and bowls. They're going to be open from like 10 in the morning to 11
at night. Bowl market at Tahini's, no matter what the price is.
Check it out because, you know, Tahini's Restaurant, there's locations in multiple places throughout Southern Ontario, owned by Ali, who is a Bitcoiner. He's been around, talked to so many Bitcoiners. Check him out. Great food. And we recommend you eating lunch and dinner over there. Do both. But I'll talk about my Bitcoiner of the week. I'll do this one really quick and I'll do it first. And mine is Plate Licking Pleb. And the reason why I chose you, Plate Licking Pleb, as my Bitcoiner of the week is because you have been organizing not only this meeting coming up on July 16th, but you've organized at least one other that I'm aware of. These take a lot of time, a lot of effort, and they tend to be very thankless because you're just running around trying to make things work out in the end. And really, it's for our benefit, for plebs like Joy and myself, and for everybody else that's going to be attending. So this is why you are my Bitcoiner of the week. I hope you continually do these events. They're fantastic. I totally recognize the fact that it isn't easy and it takes a lot of effort to do them. So please continue doing it. You're going to get kudos from us many times going forward. So I definitely look forward to this one on July 16th. So yeah, Plate Licking Pleb is my Bitcoiner of the week.
Great pick. Chat very happy with that one too. Plate Licking Pleb, outstanding Bitcoiner, doing a lot of good work for the community. Work that we so far have been unable to do. We were thinking about planning a meetup. It's fucking hard. So great. Great that you've done it. We'll try and leech off of you. Congratulations on everything you're doing. Can't wait to see what comes next. Okay, Len, Bitcoiner of the week for me. Look, okay. It's Nick Carter. I'm going with Nick Carter. Okay. Yeah, I'm gonna come to his defense. So okay. listening to Mario last week talk about maximalism and what it means and a few other smart people in the space and thinking about my own experience with Nick's content and the way that I've seen him come to the defense of the Tether FUD, the environmental FUD, the good work he's done in a number of different facets in Bitcoin. I think that, you know, it kind of shows that there's a lot of Bitcoin maxis who are not doing their due diligence as far as like what someone is into. That Castle Island website and the Castle Island podcast, they talk about a lot of stuff that they're invested in. In fact, every show, every weekend wrap up, they have or every week wrap up, they talk about the deals from the week. And sometimes they're in the deal. And I just think like, you know, you may not like his investing chops. That's fine. I would prefer he didn't invest in that stuff. But are we really going to pretend that this guy hasn't been a huge net positive in the space? Like, can anyone really say that with a straight face, that he hasn't come to the defense of Bitcoin many, many times, that he doesn't carry himself in a way that a lot of maxis wish they could, in the way that he articulates his defense of a lot of points in Bitcoin, the things that Bitcoin is good for, and you know, really does a good job stomping FUD any chance he gets? I think that's unfair to say. And so I would just recommend to people, maximalism is important. It's the immune system for new Bitcoiners, I think. It's important. It's a good immune system for Bitcoiners, and it plays a key role in the online community, I think. But this idea that we should cancel Nick, and to Bitcoin's point in the chat, like, I'm not saying he's not, I'm not saying he's not above criticism. Of course you can criticize him. We criticize him on the show. I'm criticizing him right now for his investment portfolio. But this idea that we got to cancel this guy, like he should be removed from the ether, the community, and spat on, like I don't buy it. Honestly, I just don't. I think he's been an overall net positive. And I do wish to, I think both of your points in the chat, Scotia and Bitcoin, that he didn't get so emotional about it, but who knows, man? I've never had 100,000 people come at me on Twitter. I don't know what I'd be like. Maybe I'd be emotional too. Shit, Len, you and me have had emotional responses to negative reviews during this show a few times. So
Montreal Dave comes to mind.
Yeah. So like, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know what I'd be like if I had to deal with that too. So I think he'll come around, and I think he'll continue to be net positive. I think he'll also re-embrace the laser eyes if the price does get to 100K. So I'm not worried about that either. My controversial no coiner or Bitcoin, I should say, Nick Carter. Happy to have him on the squad, even if it's not, you know, even if he's doing a little VC on the side too, that's okay with me.
I'll just counter that. The companies that he's investing in, what are they going to be doing? Presumably,
they're doing all the wrong things. But think about some of the guests we had on early. Okay, mm-hmm. Think about some of the guests we had on. We had Wendy Hamilton. UBI. Now she lost her election, thankfully.
Oh, no,
I still consider her a friend of the show. She's a good person.
Yeah.
Mark Binns. We like Mark, and you and I both invested in Big. I made a ton of money on Big in 2020, 2021. Those guys are chain surveillance, right? We had him on. Same thing with Sean Ansi, right? We had him on too. They do a little bit of chain surveillance and some other stuff as well. They work together.
Liquid doesn't do that. No,
they work together. They may. On some of the big stuff, right? I think we've had that as a news story on some of the big.
Sean was a co-founder of Big, but he's no longer. He's now just the guy on Liquid, okay. So he's no longer associated.
So, we've had those guys before, and you know, is that something that we're going to continue to do in the future? I don't know. Maybe.
No, but maybe this not. Is where I want to get at. So the companies that he's investing in, you said that they are doing all the wrong things. And the wrong things are the top stories we talked about, the BlockFi, the Celsius, the Voyager. And what they do is they bring down the price of Bitcoin to what it is today. He's without that, and we'll throw in Luna and all this, it wouldn't be at 20,000. It'd be probably double this. So, and it also leaves a black eye in the community of Bitcoin because it's the guilty of association approach that normies use. So for him to invest in companies that are not good, sure, he may have done a lot of good for Bitcoin, but
should
he's also doing.
Should we separate the two? Should we separate the two?
It's almost like looking at somebody that does something wrong, and you could look at this is maybe an extreme example, but somebody like O.J. Simpson, and he's done a lot of good, but some people may say he's done a lot of bad too. Does the good outweigh the bad? If you do something wrong, it's always going to be there, and you always have to address it, and you always have to remember it. And it's not like this guy is. He's stupid. He understands what's going on. He understands what he's doing. He's doing this to increase his wealth. All the more power to him. But in the end, what he's doing is potentially going to leave another black eye in the face of Bitcoin. And although he's done a lot of good, as I mentioned, still he's going to potentially do more bad just for the sake of...
I can't believe you went with O.J. Simpson.
No, but you can use anybody that has... They do good and bad, you know, and something that is bad enough that it could certainly impact people's lives negatively. And it has impacted people's lives negatively.
I agree with you. So
anybody that is doing that, you're not given a pass just because of what you've been doing very good. Roger Ver was doing probably very good stuff at the onset. But
isn't Ver a bad actor? Like, is Nick a bad actor for the investments or is he not? That's my line. I think that's my line. You know what I mean? Like, is Mark Binns a bad actor? And I don't think so. Is Wendy Hamilton a bad actor? I don't think so.
No.
I mean?
So
is
Wendy
Nick
Hamilton,
a bad actor for the investing? Like, is that make him bad? What does it make him?
It makes him somebody that's opportunistic for increasing his own wealth, which is, again, this is his own prerogative. He could do it. It's fine. No problem with that. But in the end, don't come to us and say we're doing something good for the community, because you're not. Is when you're investing in something that is not Bitcoin related, you are potentially going to be rug pulling somebody. you are just there at the beginning, and you'll pull out, as you mentioned before, these people are going to be exit capital, and he doesn't give a shit. I wouldn't give a shit either if I was in his position either, but I have a conscience. I wouldn't do this kind of bullshit. So all the more power to him, but he doesn't get a free pass just because of what he's done. Everything has got to be taken into consideration. So
yeah. Okay. No free pass. I'm with you on no free pass, but I think the Bitcoin team is stronger with him than without him.
Yeah. Right now.
Yeah.
But going forward, who knows what happens with this company and how it's going to negatively impact. This is
Castle Island may find themselves in a position where they're not doing good things, right? I don't know.
And
right now, I prefer to have them compared to not having them.
For sure. But we'll see moving forward. It may be another black eye in the face of Bitcoin. But let's transition, because I don't want to keep on this topic too long. My no-coiner is a gentleman by the name of Will Daniel, and he's written the same piece was published on numerous publications such as Yahoo, Fortune, and so forth. And really what it is, the article title is, "What Causes a Recession? Maybe It's You and How Grumpy You Are About the Economy." And when somebody is blaming us, you and I, and our mood that is causing the economy to go to the shits, this guy is truly a no-coiner. The reason why the fucking economy is not doing good is because of decisions that were made by very powerful people, and we are paying the price as a result. When you print money to, not really infinity, but when you print a lot of money and you add a lot of it in a very short period of time, low interest rates, you shut down the economy, and you create supply chain issues. These are all things that create a slowdown in the economy, that creates higher prices, and it creates a recession. Here we are. It's not due to my mood. It's not due to Joey's mood. It's not due to anybody's grumpiness. The economy is agnostic to our mood. The economy is not agnostic to stupid decisions. And that's what made it. Stupid decisions brought us here. That's what's causing the recession. It's not here in, it's not official yet, but we saw the Atlanta Fed's. They said it's going to be a negative GDP for
Q2. It's official.
Call it official. So it ain't fucking, it's not us about being grumpy. It's the fucking decisions being made. And this guy, Will Daniel, you're my fucking no corner of the week.
I like that. I didn't read that article. I did see that headline floating around though. Pretty good. That's gold, man. I can't believe these guys write that stuff, man.
It's bullshit. It's absolute fucking bullshit.
Oh my God. Who's asking them to do that? I have no idea.
He gets paid. He must get paid by per piece that he submits. So he's just throwing our shit.
He's just piling into stuff.
Yeah.
Clicks, right? Yeah.
Just throwing our shit out there to gaslight and gets the clicks and he's good to go. That's a shitcoiner mentality. Maybe Nick Carter is helping fund this. Who the fuck knows?
Anyway,
yeah.
Oh, man.
So yeah,
that's that pick. I think.
No. It's a good pick.
I'm going to look at my mentions after this, and it's going to be a disaster.
No, I like when somebody stands by something that is against the norm, and that's a pretty good pick. So I'm going to give you credit for that.
Yeah, I think whatever. You know what I think. That's it. Yeah. Are we done? Should we read the price and then go to the after show here? What are we talking
about? Let's do it. And for those who are in the audio that isn't watching us on YouTube, what the hell are you doing? You could be my no corner of the week, just we're not watching this. This chat is still rocking, and we're going to chat with them right after this is done.
Price of Bitcoin as I wait for my block clock to turn. I don't know. It's going to be 20,300. I saw.
I got 26,111 in Canadian dollars. So it's gone up
2352 in US. We're cooking. We're cooking
on the way up. I like this.
Like it. Great. God bless you. Thanks for coming. Don't forget to come to the meetup on the 16th. Where is it again, Len? You want to rip that address one more time?
Oh, geez. It's at the very beginning of my notes. Give me 1 second. You caught me off guard.
Yeah, take your time. No worries.
Safari Bar and Grill, 1749 Avenue Road North. And yes, in an area of around 401 and Avenue Road. Greg Foss, Tomer Strolite's going to be there. Of course, us, the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, we're going to be doing a live event. Sponsored by ShakePay, there's going to be free booze, free food, and as well, one of these guys, not this one in particular, but one of these, the cold card Mark IV, is going to be raffled off by CoinKite. So come on out. Going to be lots of fun. Booze, food, cold cards, and even us. How could you go wrong?
We love it. That's it. We'll see you guys on Wednesday when we have Jeff Booth coming by for an hour.
Stay Well, look at this. Plate licking flap saying there's going to be 40-yard dashes that are going to be held over there.
I'm still not ready. I'm close, but I'm not ready yet. Okay, we'll see you in the after show. Take care.
Take care.